Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Ashraf Azat, you're going to have to forgive me for my pronunciations. The world has not seen such brutality and savagery in modern times. Horrible stories were told about the Celts, the Aztecs, and the Mongols. Nevertheless, they always remain stories of the remote past. But with the militants of the so-called Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS are doing is something else. What they are perpetuating defy any literary power to try and put it into words. Perpetrating defiance, defying any literary power to try and put it into words. Driven by what they see as divine command and wreaking havoc and devastation only thought possible in Hollywood production, the Islamic militant group ISIS has pushed the definition of terrorism to a new and scary limit. The ongoing banquet of Carnegie has to be seen not only that to be believed, but the grasp how religion that should have united humans in peace could turn into a license to lawless slaughter. This man has a video you can watch of slaughter, which I don't recommend, unless you like to watch mass executions of Iraq civilians and soldiers. Contrary to what most commentators have said, it is not the graphic scene of mass execution and beheading of hundreds of innocent civilians by ISIS that I find most repulsive. The American war on Iraq has left thousands killed in cold blood and countless numbers born with abnormalities caused by U.S. radioactive lethal weaponry, high-tech savagery that often go unreported by MSM. What I personally find really scary is that the ISIS militants is that they carry out their onslaught seemingly without any shred of guilt or shame. The militants, Mujahideen, go about their business as usual, beheading their opponents minutes after they fall into their captivity, and minutes later they all go and join each other in a humble prayer to God. He didn't capitalize that, God. Following the scriptures literally. Now what's interesting, or rather shocking, is the fact that those hideous acts of terrorism were executed by people who claim they are devout Muslims. I know that the whole world, including the Islamic world, is viewing ISIS Mujahideen as the ultimate example of brutal terrorism in modern times savagery. But this worldview doesn't concern me as much as how those Muslim terrorists really view themselves. Moreover, why a supposedly devout Muslim should end up as a global terrorist, should for merely doing what his faith obliged him to undertake. Ladies and gents, regardless of who is funding ISIS and the fact that many of their militants, including Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, have been trained in U.S. military base in Jordan, and maybe some of their top leaders have been also recruited by CIA, one fact remains so obvious and yet so bewildering. Those ruthless ISIS terrorists sincerely believe they are pious devotees of Islam's God, Allah, and that they act according to His holy scripture, Quran, and they are the true followers of His prophet, Muhammad. You won't believe this, but in a strange way, those ISIS terrorists are telling the truth, or what they were made to believe in the is the truth. The ugly truth is that ISIS terrorists are acting literally according to some of the many Quran verses that incite fighting and killing non-Muslims in almost cold-blooded way. This is part of the Quran, but it's old, like, historical fighting. Not something that was supposed to continue. Fighting is prescribed for you, and you dislike it, but it is possible that you dislike a thing which is good for you, and that you love a thing which is bad for you. But Allah knows, and you know not. Quran 2:16. Now, and before we elaborate any further, let's get this one thing about Quran straight. Like Judaism, Islam is a religion of laws. Actually, Judaism and Islam are so much alike, the Quran, not the Christian Bible, should be labeled the New Testament. After all, both Quran and the Tanakh are the product of the same Arabic nomadic culture, a topic expanded upon in upcoming series of articles. While the Gospels of Christianity have been influenced, softened by the Greco-Roman philosophy, and separated from the state by the power of Jesus' famous line, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's." The Tanakh and Quran kept their strong tribal culture and binding laws unmitigated over the centuries. As a Christian, as long as you believe in Jesus, you only need the scripture as a spiritual guideline. But in Judaism and Islam, you are bound by the Canaan of your faith to embrace their rules as the instruction book of your day-to-day life. The Hebrew Muslim laws tell their followers what to eat and what not to eat and drink, how to get married, how to get divorced, how to get into the bathroom, and yes, how and when to kill the non-believers. The key point here is how should the Holy Scriptures, especially those of Islam, be interpreted. The verses of any Holy Scripture should be interpreted in accordance with their historical context, but that is not what the Muslims, at least nowadays, do. This is the focal source of all extremism and terrorism. Islam's dilemma. The dilemma of Islam, it has been for a while actually, is that its theologians, imams, and clerics fail to view the scripture, especially the verses that promote fighting and jihad, within the frame of its historical context. They'd rather keep them open-minded as part of an eternal and always relevant words of Allah. Most conservative Muslim clerics are under the impression that binding many of the verses to its historicity might restrain the authority of a big chunk of the scripture and consequently the influence of the Islamic clergy. This dilemma has been ignored for centuries, thus paving maybe more ways and opening more doors for ultra-conservative literalism, also known as fundamentalism, closest back door to violence and terrorism. That said, the more any Muslim conservative reads verses from the Quran and memorizes hadith sayings by Prophet Muhammad, the more he is likely to take it absolutely literally and automatically apply it to his current life and affairs, not to mention that piles of hadith are of doubtful source and purpose. Soon shall we cast terror into the hearts of the unbelievers, for that they join companies with Allah, for which he had sent no authority, Quran 3, 151. If we to interpret the above verse in its historical context, we will learn that some pagan tribes of the Arab Peninsula were terrified and finally defeated by the raids of Muhammad and his followers back in the early 7th century. But if we to interpret it literally, it may be relevant to the present point in time, then we were talking about ISIS Mujahideen casting terror by mass execution and beheading, like the early Muslim fighters used to do, into the hearts of the followers of infidels Bashar al-Assad of Syria and al-Maliki of Iraq, for they ruled that according to Islamic Saharia. Do you see how terrifyingly simple this is and how terrifyingly complicated this has become? At this point in my article, I expect many to be offended by my candid exposition and might try and refute my thesis by irritably commenting early Muslims and Mujahideen never killed fellow Muslims. And my reply would be, yes, they did. Sunni killed Shia and Karbala in 680 AD, and a bloody perpetual conflict between the two sects has ensued ever since, till this very day. Not to mention the masquerades perpetrated by Almohad and Abbasid caliphates. Bad dogma. While everybody is agitatedly follows the news and videos of ISIS, nobody is asking the logical question, how did such a group of dangerous fanatics create in the first place? ISIS has created not only due to militarization by U.S. Army, nor recruitment by CIA, but primarily because of misinterpreted scripture and bad dogma. Another ugly truth is the fact that early Muslims of the Arab Peninsula, during the following death of Muhammad, were so brutal in their fighting and raids. The early Muslims, Sahaba, were economically desperate. As a newly formed community, they needed money and craved for influence, so they began by raiding trade caravans in the peninsula, the ancient spices and incense road, and ended up raiding Persian, Roman, and Egyptian territories. Beheading the enemies as a means to evoke fear was a common practice in the ancient Arabian tribal wars. Khalid bin Walid, the military commander of the early days of the Islamic State, never hesitated to behead the fighters of his enemies. The Islamic records reveal that bin Walid, after the Battle of Ulais, 633 AD, a.k.a. the Battle of Blood River, spent a whole day and night beheading 7,000 soldiers and dumping them in the river, flowing it with their blood, and rejoice in gratitude for Allah's brought victory over the Persians. Submit to Islam and be safe, or agree to the payment of jizya, and you and your people will be under our protection, else you will have only yourself to blame for the consequences. For I bring the men who desire death as ardently as you desire life. Khalid bin Walid's letter to the Sassanid Persians before he raided their empire, very similar to ISIS raid threats. Now, could you see the example of ISIS Mujahideen are following What Isis did to the Christians of Mosul is no different than what Bin Walid had earlier done with the blessings of Islam's caliphate at the time to the Christians of the Sassanid Empire. Contrary to what the clergy or Islamic media claim, ISIS and Al-Qaeda is not the exception. The millions of so-called moderate Muslims around the world are. Those fundamentalist Islamists who are casting terror into the heart of the civilized world are but a copycat of the Mujahideen of early Islam. Whether we like it or not, this is the ugly truth. The reason why the majority of Muslims does not act like ISIS nor condone its crimes is because those millions of the so-called moderate Muslims have not been prone to fundamentalist Islamic teaching through indoctrination, intellectual hypnosis. Once they are, even if they were brought up in Western communities, a considerable faction of them, especially those with assimilation and economic problems, will turn into dogmatic jihadists ready to be recruited by ISIS. Another important factor that many tend to overlook is that the majority of world Muslims act according to preconceptions that their own indigenous culture and traditions have mainly contributed to, and not only Islam. Hence the term moderate Muslims denotes an attitude mindset brought about by a blend between different cultures, be it Egyptian, Syrian, or Persian in Islam. And indeed, their intercultural blend is the reason why the fundamentalist and harsh Bedouin side of Islam have been ameliorated enough to allow millions of Muslims to coexist with their fellow men of other creeds and theology over the long centuries. Reform of Islam, and I'm almost done with the article. ISIS could be a peril to Islam's reputation and future around the world, but there is a good flip side to the situation. Never before in recent times have the Muslim clergy had the opportunity and the imperative to embark on reforming Islam. Jihadist groups and the rise of political Islam won't be eradicated or even curbed by air power and drone attacks. ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra Front, and Muslim Brotherhood won't be dismantled except by reforming and changing the mainstream narrative of Islam. For Muslims, nothing short of that will be like burying their heads in the sand. ISIS is a reason enough for our high-profile Muslim scholars to start purifying the hadith from tons of controversial sayings and teachings, doing more harm than good, claimed to have been told by Muhammad. ISIS is a reason enough to start a new approach in interpreting the Quran's verses, especially those narrating the chronicles of Muhammad and follower battles against pagans, launching a new school of credible and enlightened Muslim scholars that will respect the historical context of the scripture verses in the first step toward reforming Islam. This couldn't have been more urgent a time, for world Muslims have been leaning dangerously towards fundamentalism and extremism through the last 80 years, ever since the establishment of Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and following the rise of Wahhabi tribe in Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. If this rare opportunity for reforming Islam passed unnoticed and unexploited, then we suffer from endless and more powerful tides of fundamentalist jihadist groups. And we have to be aware of the fact that the groups that will follow ISIS will be more cruel and tougher, and they will definitely attract huge numbers of Mujahideen, so huge no military coalition will be able to break them down. Most probably the current coalition led by U.S. will be able to dismantle ISIS. Militarily, but not ideologically. The task of dismantling ISIS, bad ideas, and dangerous dogma is a vital battle that Muslims themselves, led by their scholars and clergy, should undertake. This is by Ashraf Azat, comes from Egypt, the dwelling lands of the gods. He works as a medical doctor, but writing has always been one of his passions. he has tons of responses. One is Catman says the ugly truth is that ISIS is backed by the U.S. and Israel as part of the Zionist plan to turn large chunks of the ME over to Israel to fulfill the dream of the Aztec Eretz Israel. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to stop there because those comments are looking a little strange. And I think that was a really good read. I mean, it was about reformation. He had ideas of what needs to be done to change the mindset of them that are involved in these extremist groups in the Middle East. And he gave, I guess, a little bit of respect to the American military, saying they're the only ones that could dismantle them on a military level. On a military level, but not on a dogmatic, theological level. 8 minutes left. Play Jesus, Can You Find My Heart? I hope everyone has a beautiful day.